I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver, British Columbia at thecommentary.ca. A new book takes us to West Vancouver with a wonderful sketch of its history, geography, and people. The book, Dreamers and Designers, The Shaping of West Vancouver, is written by the noted historian Francis Mansbridge. He charts the history of this bucolic part of the north shore of Burrard Inlet, shaped by its unique geography, the mountains and creeks and ravines, by telling us about the people who came here from all over the world. He looks at the relationship with the Squamish people of the Capilano Reserve No. 5, as well as where West Vancouver is headed. It is not immune to the challenges of density and diversity. And Mr. Mansbridge examines both as well in the book. The photographs in the book are by John Moore, and there's marvelous archival photographs as well. Francis Mansbridge has long been associated with the North Vancouver Museum and Archives. He is a contributor to both newspapers and literary journals, and the author of God's Recording Angel, a biography of Irving Layton, as well as Wild Gooseberries, the Selected Letters of Irving Layton. This new book is a production of the West Vancouver Historical Society and is published by Harbor. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program, Francis Mansbridge. Mr. Mansbridge, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
So I don't get up to the North Shore that much, and it's been years since I've been in West Vancouver, but this book is not only a great, say, tool of history in terms of reading up about how West Vancouver became what it is, but it talks about the present and a lot of these contemporary issues that West Vancouver is contending with are issues that everyone in the region is as well.
Exactly.
And it's fascinating to see, though, how this place has been built up, and yet a lot of the issues that confounded it, say, 50, 100 years ago are still there today.
Yes, it's in a way it's separate from the rest of the Lower Mainland, both geographically and I guess primarily geographically, and because of that it has kind of, it's a more concentrated, I guess, version of the larger Lower Mainland, and I think in many ways it's kind of like a petri dish for, you know, as far as its development is concerned, because the issues that it is dealing with are similar to those that are dealt with by Vancouver and other communities, but in a way they're more to the forefront. You know, there's no escaping high house prices in West Vancouver, which to some extent you can in Vancouver, in some ways anyway.
Right. We'll talk about some of the contemporary things in a moment, but let's talk to the person that you dedicate the book to, Joseph Bentley Leyland. Who was he?
He was Reeve of West Vancouver from 1930 to 1940, and he certainly did a lot to develop West Vancouver into the type of community it is today. And I think he saw West Vancouver as not this place at the end of the road, but as a community right in the center, linked by bridges to Vancouver and North Vancouver, which he was instrumental in getting built, and also by road to Whistler, which he was a great promoter of, a great promoter of that area being made into a park, which was after his death, but certainly he laid the groundwork for that.
Well, what strikes me about him as I'm reading your book, Francis, is the foresight he had in terms of how he saw this part of the world and what it could become. You talk about the connection to Vancouver and then going north to Whistler. I mean, that really is the British Columbia of, say, you know, the 20th century into the 21st, especially when we think of, say, the 2010 Olympic Games as a marker of time.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he certainly did see that, and it's curious. He lived actually a relatively simple life. He wasn't poor by any means, but he had his little place on the waterfront at Rogers Creek, and the house that was built in that place, although not his own house, but a house was built there in 1997, was assessed in 2017 at over $18 million, which is kind of a graphic, I guess, indication of the way West Vancouver has been going in the last few decades.
So if North Vancouver was more urban, say more industrial, especially along the quay there, what was the goal for West Vancouver?
Well, they became non-industrial more by accident than choice, because it's a very poor place for industry. You know, there's not a good harbor there. It's not protected. It's outside, of course, the First Narrows. And they tried to attract industry there in the early years, but, there was no one did really want to go there. And so they made a virtue out of necessity, I guess, and it was promoted from fairly early times as a place for fairly affluent people for fairly large single-family homes. And that certainly held true until about, 1959, when they started building apartment buildings in large numbers.
Well, so it really was because there were a lot of English people in that part of the world,
yes.
Sort of the country estate mentality, that's how they saw it's literally
yeah.
called the British properties, right?
Well that the northern part of it was, yeah.
Yeah.
And that was all well and good as long as there was lots of land.
Yeah.
But now that, you know, land has become more scarce and more expensive, then, they've had to pursue different directions. And that has created a lot of stress on the community. And there are some serious problems that have to be addressed. And I hope people can get together and talk about them and achieve some resolution in the near future.
Yeah. You write in the book, too, Francis, about the relationship between governments of the day and the Squamish Nation.
Yes.
How would you describe those?
Well, at present they're amicable,
mm-hmm.
and certainly they have had severe problems in the past. The Squamish were certainly treated poorly throughout the early part of the development of West Vancouver, at least until around 1970, as they were not recognized as having control over their land. And you know, land keeps on coming up in West Vancouver. It's one of the big issues.
Yeah.
And in the 70s and beyond, they have gradually assumed control, and now they control their reserve land. They are able to tax the people on it. They're able to, make the type of bylaws that a municipality would on it, and are currently pursuing some fairly big development projects, which may or may not happen, but certainly they are pursuing plans to build quite large apartment buildings in their property on their reserve.
Now, how is it today in terms of the community that makes up the population there, that makes their home up there? I mean, is it as diverse as, say, other parts of Metro Vancouver?
Well, it's ethnic, from racially, yeah, it's pretty close to the rest of Vancouver. Economically, of course, no,
mm-hmm.
it's not. And as I talk about in the book, there are problems that have grown up by many of the people who have moved here in the last few decades have been quite affluent,
mm-hmm.
many from Asia, also from other parts of the world. And they've found that life in West Vancouver, when you're living in, say, a very nice house, but, there's no real community, it has created a lot of social stresses. The British Properties Hub has been established to take care to address one of the problems that vulnerability of the kindergarten kids is one of the highest in BC.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have the, they aren't prepared for kindergarten or grade one because of various cultural factors, not economic so much, but the fact that they are kind of in this urban desert, really,
yeah.
With very little connection with others.
Yeah,
that's perhaps a little strong, but. But,
sure, sure.
No, it's difficult for many people living there.
Yeah, and I mean, demographically, we've always thought of, say, the people in West Vancouver as older. Is that changing?
No, well, they're getting older.
Yeah.
So, but, no, the general trend is that people are getting older, partly because younger people cannot afford to live there.
Right.
And and many people cannot afford to work there. So I think the average house price has gone down a bit, but it's still around $2.6 million, and not many people can afford that.
So
mostly the people who live there are older, and the population has in fact declined in the past a few years.
Now, we've touched on this already. The challenges of affordability. I mean, that confound all of us throughout the region.
Yeah.
You mentioned a moment ago that it was in the early 1960s that they began building apartments. Is that right?
Uh-huh.
And so how is the zoning and densification? How has that been grappled with in West Vancouver historically and into today? Because I mean, there's lots of talk of you mentioned these developments that are upcoming.
Uh-huh.
Whether they get passed or not, that's another story, right?
Yeah. Well, I think certainly you could write a book on that. And the increased density with apartments was necessary because they needed the taxation for the infrastructure. Now, of course, they are building some fairly large projects at like Grosvenor and Omni, and there, of course, the density there is far higher than would be allowed in the zoning practices. And so what happens in short is that the developer agrees to pay a certain amount of money to the municipality in return for higher density.
Mm.
And so in the places like Grosvenor, it's over $10 million. And so this is something that certainly attracts the municipality and does bring in a lot of money for they say community amenities.
Yeah.
And so, but it doesn't certainly solve the affordability problem because the apartments there are slightly cheaper than houses, but not much.
Right. Well, isn't that the story across the region?
Yeah.
Yeah, the thing that struck me about the photographs in the book is that it's a marvelous sketch of the unique geography, especially if you're not from this part of the world. It's gorgeous in some parts.
Mm-hmm.
This is a good place to talk about Eagle Bluffs and the fight for its preservation in the run up to the 2010 games. You write about that in the book and how that galvanized the community.
Yes, and the community. The stereotype of West Vancouver is there maybe a bunch of snobbish people who aren't really concerned with anything but themselves and their own money. And it's true of a lot of people there, certainly. But there's a really vital, energetic, environmental, and generally community-oriented group of people in West Vancouver. And certainly that came out in the Eagle Bluffs confrontation.
Mm.
And, certainly my contact with West Vancouver is with the majority of people is that there's been tremendous work done environmentally as far as preserving the streams, as far as preserving the ecosystems. Even the notorious British Properties, they have been certainly world leaders in some of their some of the environmental changes they have brought in building houses and preserving the wetlands and so on.
Right.
And unfortunately, that doesn't make the houses cheaper because the land is expensive, and that's
right.
The one thing that kind of is maybe it's an unsolvable problem that you can't have a cheap house on a $3 million lot, and this is something that has, I guess, influenced the way things have developed.
Yeah. The other thing that struck me is this sort of modernist style of architecture that came out of the 50s and 60s.
Yeah.
There are a lot of those homes found in West Van, and what's fascinating for people when they see the book is a lot of these houses They've literally grown out of the landscape. So they're either propped precariously on top of a rock in the sort, or they're jutting out of, say, you know, whatever's green or a forest. Have a lot of those homes survived?
Oh, yes, yes. The geography has certainly, you know, it's been a challenge that, you know, overcoming it has led to some marvelous architecture in West Vancouver. Some of the older homes, the older modernist homes built in the 1950s, have been torn down, whether necessary or not, I wouldn't say, but certainly a lot of the homes that have been built, you know, are doing well. There have been problems, like wood doesn't do well on the West Coast, and most of the houses are built primarily out of wood. And there are houses like the B.C. Binning House are having a lot of problems. And so there's partial solution that we've come up with is putting another house in the same lot.
Mm.
And then the money from selling that house, you know, say $2 million, will be more than enough to do repairs on the B.C. Binning House.
Right.
But that, of course, is pretty sensitive because these houses are owned by people who have their own ideas as to what should be done. So it's a sense of kind of a tricky negotiation that takes place between the municipality and the owners and the architects to try and come up with something that'll work for everyone. But it they have done some good work there. Some of the old houses have been torn down, maybe more well. You can imagine if you have a house and you tear it down, and you can maybe you buy it for X amount of dollars, and if you can put up a house on the same lot that it sells for $1 million more.
Yeah.
A lot of developers are not going to turn their nose up at that.
Right. Right.
And the municipal government, I don't know. I think they could be harder. They could play a harder ball in some cases, especially with places like Caulfield, where a lot of the old homes have been torn down, and the new homes that have been put up are sometimes not done with the type of sensitivity in an architectural way that they should be.
Right.
So that's one of the things that West Vancouver has to deal with. I was in Amsterdam last summer, and Amsterdam, there's tight control over everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I would want to live in that type of society, but I think we might have to move more in that direction, you know, is my feeling.
Yeah. So, Francis, you're a historian.
Well, not really.
No.
My degrees are in English.
I see, yeah. Well, you wrote a couple books on...
I'm an historian because I write books about history, I guess, yeah.
Yeah. You wrote a book on Irving Layton, I understand. Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. But you're someone who's acquainted well with the archives on the North Shore. In terms of writing this book, how did you find institutions there? How were they in terms of preserving the history of West Vancouver?
Oh, well, I worked in the North Vancouver Archives for about 13 years, so I think that's a wonderful archives.
Mm-hmm.
And for this book, I worked a lot with West Vancouver Archives, and it's small, and they need a larger space, but certainly they have a very useful collection with many wonderful photographs, so that was useful. The library is also, I think, one of the finest community libraries anywhere, and... So I worked there a lot, and more than anything, I talked to people. You know, I think I interviewed maybe 50 people, and you know, that's for a book of this nature. That's where a lot of the interesting things are happening, because a lot of them aren't in books yet.
Yeah, you get a lot of color in terms of what it was like to live there, historically and as now. So when you think of your work. It does because we're all talking about how this region is changing and far too quickly for some of us.
Uh-huh.
Do you find that your work, in terms of chronicling history, is made more urgent because of all these changes around us? I mean, stuff could get forgotten very quickly.
Yeah.
I think people like you perform more than, say, work. It's an actual service for the community in terms of documenting all this.
I do feel there's an urgency, and I think that there are some people in West Vancouver, older people, you know, kind of après mort la deluge kind of thing. You know, they know that there were problems, but they're too old to really, or too old, not really too old, but they don't really want to, to make the difficult decisions about changing them.
Yeah.
And I think urgent for all of the Lower Mainland, for maybe beyond that, but especially urgent for West Vancouver, because one of the things is if you don't have people living there who, you know, they live elsewhere because they can't afford to live there. My wife works at the Lionsgate Hospital. She quite often cannot get a bus in the morning because they're full.
Mm.
And, the traffic, of course, coming in over the bridges is horrendous,
mm-hmm.
because people are coming in there to work.
Yeah.
I think the problems don't get much worse every year, but 20 years from now, you might wake up and think,
right,
maybe we should have done something while we could.
Yeah, and that's...
And I hope something is done before that.
Yeah, and so do you find then amongst, say, government and business leaders, are you seeing the sort of creativity, the sort of innovation that needs to happen to make West Vancouver, say, a lot more sustainable than it is now?
Well, there is some. I think there could be a lot more. I've talked with a number of former politicians and business people who said that, you know, what we need is somebody to really grab hold of the problem and act as leaders to move the community.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, it's kind of contrary to our democratic way. And I find I'm becoming more of a left-wing populist as I get older, that, you know, I feel sometimes that it would be good for someone to come along and encourage people to adopt solutions rather mm. than to ask people what they think all the time. I don't really know what the solutions would be, so I would not be a good person to do that.
I guess someone like Leland, someone with a vision.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
I think that's what we need, right?
Yeah, someone like him, people like Roy Pidgeon and what's his name, Claire, in the 40s too.
Mm-hmm.
They were like that. I don't know if a person like that could function today in our, you know, very complex bureaucratic and governmental setups, but I think perhaps they could. It would be nice to see if they could give it a try anyway.
You know, this book, beyond being a beautiful book and, mm-hmm. and wonderfully illustrated, is it's a wonderful history of
mm-hmm.
West Vancouver. But beyond that, it gives us a lot to think about, because I think the way that West Vancouver goes in the future will be instructive to other parts of the region, say, you know, Surrey 50 years from now,
yeah.
or parts of Vancouver a generation or two from now.
The West Vancouver Cultural Foundation
mm-hmm.
had a number of meetings last spring, and I took part in all of them. And there is a real will on a part of quite a few people to do things. And there's and West Vancouver has a tremendous fund of intelligent, well-educated people who are dedicated to the community. So I think if the book accomplishes anything, I hope it continues that, you know, of people discussing things. And I think if the more people get out and talk about things, then perhaps the closer they get to finding out things that they could do that would make things better.
Well, you've done a marvelous job in terms of starting the conversation. It's been such a pleasure to talk to you, Francis. I've admired your work for a long time now.
Thank you.
Congratulations on this book, and continued good luck with it. I appreciate your time today.
Thanks. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
The book is called Dreamers and Designers, The Shaping of West Vancouver. It's from Harbor Publishing. Its author, Francis Mansbridge, joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plunta.